head coach of the Detroit Pistons, Dwayne Casey. Dwayne, great to speak with you today. And before I even talk, Dwayne, about sports, just as a husband, as a father, as a man, how have you handled the last 4 months, Dwayne, and what you're telling yourself, let alone your family, your children, and how you're kind of living amongst the public?
Well, it's first of all, thank you guys for having me on, Eric and Jonesy. It's these are trying times, and I don't think there's a playbook that you can go by or live by except for respect for your fellow man. And the way you respect your fellow man is to, like you guys are talking about, wearing a face mask and, you know, well, I don't have it. Well, guess what? You know, you don't know. And for sure. And the guy next to you doesn't know. So you have to respect each other's space. And Eric, I love what you're doing with your family, because with that is respect for each other, because you don't know what someone else is dealing with. So, but it's been, you know, it's been gratifying the last 4 months. I would say it's the first time in my life, my working life, that I've had an opportunity to spend it with my kids, my family, and also have time to sit back and just breathe and see what life's about, what's important in life, what's not important in life, and take an inventory from that standpoint. And that's something I think is something I hope we've all done and we'll all do. And it's given me a chance to get closer to my kids and closer to my wife and to understand exactly, you know, what is important. And, again, basketball is what I do, but they're probably not the most important thing for all of us in life, as we see, you know. And so I think that's something that I think if you ask a lot of people, Ian, Jonesy, that they would explain that's, you know, kind of the inventory that everybody's taking.
Case, are you, you know, it's unfortunate the Pistons aren't involved in the restart, and I've read a lot of stuff where, you know, you want your young players, you wanted them to get some of that experience, and you're talking about potential out-of-league other activities. But when you look at what the NBA's done, would you be comfortable going into that restart situation if you had to go in with your team?
I would be comfortable. I would be comfortable and cautious, because I've seen so many situations where, you know, you think you've been comfortable, you've been safe, and people still – testing positive. So, but again, I do know that the league has taken every precaution, talked to every specialist that they've could to try to make it virus proof. Again, I'm watching, talking to different people. I don't know if there is such thing as virus proof 100%. I like what Avery Bradley has done. You know, he has a child that has, you know, compromised immune situation, that you could take it back to him or you know, compromise your family. And I respect that by those players. But I do know the league has done everything possible to make it as safe as possible for everybody involved, everybody that's going down there to be in the bubble. Now, the key thing is guys complying with the rules, with the situation, to make sure it stays safe. Because, again, like I said, it takes one guy that's not responsible or person not responsible down there, and then you compromise everybody. But the league, I do know the working that's gone into it, the protocols they've taken, and how, you know, Adam has taken this as a personal war against the virus that's down there.
Speaking with Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Detroit Pistons. Dwayne, when you stand back, and again, as Jonesy said, unfortunately not a part of the 22 teams, one thing I've felt at least is that I've liked about what the NBA is doing, putting the virus stuff aside, is when we look at baseball's plan, as much as I love the fact that they're expanding the teams, the playoffs to 16 teams, when you look at hockey's plan, which I'm still somewhat confused by as we speak this very second, it seems like the NBA found a way to do this with as close to the norm as possible. I know there's this sort of mini sort of potential play-in tournament for the eighth and the ninth seed battling it out. But at the end of the day, it's going to be 1 through 8 in the West, 1 through 8 in the East, you know, best of 7 in each round. And that's the one thing that I like with the NBA is that it's as close to normal and as close to regular as possible and not getting too gimmicky.
No question. And I think that's great. And we'll legitimize the champion a little bit more with that too, Eric. And I think that's good. And again, both of you mentioned, you know, what we're doing is on purpose. We're rebuilding our team. We knew we didn't want, wasn't going to be there. We'd like to be, but I think the alternative plan that we've talked about, having the teams that weren't invited have a round robin summer league type situation. And I think some of the teams that are going down there are doing the same thing, is just going and playing the young players, even in the playoff situation. So I think that's where we are. I know that's where we are. And we're thankful to have some competition, because I think all the teams are going down there, going from March 11th to December to whatever it is, first week of December, second week of December, having that situation and no competition is a long time. So we want our young guys and young kids, not Blake, not Derrick Rose, to have some type of competition to go down there. To play in. I think we're going to try to have one here, and we've proposed, I think, one in Minneapolis. So there's two situations where we have but again, having something that's safe is going to be, I'm sure, the league's going to look at and they're considering. But I do like the format, Eric, down there. I think it's a great format, and it's as close as you can get in these times to having a normal playoff situation. And the top eight teams, which all of our legit teams, are going to be there. And the issue is to see, which of those top eight teams, the players that don't feel comfortable going and playing. And I know the league is very strong with this, not forcing players to play if they don't feel comfortable or not having a punishment for them. Now, they'll forfeit the salary, but the format, the play-in format, the actual playoff situation, and I can't wait to see it. I think it's going to be exciting. I think both conferences have legit teams that have opportunities to win the championship. Toronto has an opportunity to win it again. Boston feels like they have an opportunity. Milwaukee feel like this is their time around. Philadelphia, and you can't count out Miami either. So it's going to be some good basketball in the Eastern Conference. There's going to be some excellent basketball in the Western Conference. See who comes out of there.
Case, mm-hmm. give me from a coaching standpoint, again, mm-hmm. you were preparing at one time for this potential restart, but you're not involved right. now. Give me your right. potential checklist when you think about, mm-hmm. here are things that I really need to make sure are looked after. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. once you do that with your team, and I'm sure other teams are mm-hmm. doing the same kind of thing, who do you look at and say, this team has an advantage? Like some people say, the rest will be good because, mm-hmm. We always talk about the rest versus rust. The rest will be good. Mm-hmm. But the other side of it is the experienced teams get rested too. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. who do you think might have an inherent advantage there?
Well, I think, like you said, the experienced teams, the older teams have a definite advantage. The disadvantage with that is ramping it back up again. The older players ramping it back up, and how long is it going to take them to ramp it back up? Because it does take guys' body a while to get back in game shape, the game sharpness. The rest is great for that standpoint. But again, an older player in either conference, how long is it going to take LeBron to ramp it back up to get through? And the problem with that is okay, do you ramp it up too quick? And that was my major concern, even with young players coming back. How fast, how hard do you go? How long is it going to take to get your bodies? Because I don't think any player in our league, Jonesy and Eric, have experienced the fact that my body has been off from NBA competition for what, four months now. And now all at once you throw them into scrimmaging, going one-on-one, going back at 100 miles an hour. So that ramping up process has to be on point, or you risk, hurting someone, a serious injury, not just a poor muscle, but, you know, something very serious. So that was my major concern going back in, timing that point, timing the body, getting it in great shape. And that's where I know Toronto has Alex McKechnie, who's one of the best in the league, our sports science gentleman, you know, who has his doctor's degree, you know, was talking to him about how long it's going to take, what drills, what we can do with their body to get to that point. So that rest versus rust situation, Jones, as you said, is very tricky. Again, you almost have to look at going back in as older players going into exhibition season, so to speak, before they jump right in, because that could be very touchy.
Speaking with head coach of the Detroit Pistons, Dwayne Casey, just as a side note here, as we were speaking literally a minute ago, Case, Shams Charania sent out a tweet. Indiana Pacers guard Malcolm Brogdon tested positive for coronavirus. A quote from Brogdon saying, "I'm doing well, feeling well, progressing well. I still plan to join my teammates in Orlando for the resumption of the NBA season and playoffs." Dwayne, I know you were on our station a couple of weeks ago joining our colleagues Tim and Sid. You said earlier in our conversation here you've had a chance to sort of step back and breathe a little bit and take in what's happening with COVID-19, but there's so much more going on stateside in Canada, around the world as well. Considering everything you've been through in your life growing up in the South to where you are now, how have you, again, sort of approached this as a man, as a father, these last few weeks and the way that things have certainly unfolded stateside, but as I say, across the globe, Dwayne?
Well, yeah, I think it's, you know, like you said, it's across the globe. It's there in Toronto, that's there in over in Europe, it's in the United States. Probably more talked about now here in the States as ever before, which is a great thing. Some of the injustices in our judicial system, our sentencing system, our police policy, you know, how many more times African-American young man is or young lady is being is has the possibility of being arrested than anybody else. And again, if we all did a survey and a deep count, I think we can all look at, you know, whether it's in Canada, here in the States, an inventory of racial injustice, whether it's subtle, whether it's real, whether it's perceived, whatever it is. Hiring practices, firing practices, or schools. We can look at all of our inventory and see how it is. I met with our police chief, my owner, Tom Gores, and I met with our police chief here to see what we can do and talk about some of the injustices that are perceived with the police force here in Detroit. And you can look at it all over the world, but it is real. And you know, the great thing about right now, guys, is people are talking about it, and not just talking about it, acting upon it. What NASCAR just did with their NASCAR taking away the Confederate flag, and people, even though people felt comfortable with that, it didn't make African Americans feel comfortable because it's a symbol. And for them to do that, to take the Confederate flag down, was a huge step. Now, does it change people's hearts? Probably not. Probably not. But it's making a lot of people uncomfortable. And until we make everyone uncomfortable to see some of the injustices in Canada, whether it's here in the States, that's the only time you're going to make progress. And it's very uncomfortable. People don't want to talk about what's right, what's wrong, about our society, about how it makes African Americans or the minority. It doesn't have to be African Americans. We have the Chaldeans here in the Michigan area. You know, they're a minority. How does it make them feel about certain things? How does it make Indians feel or First Nation people? How does it make them feel about certain things? But until we face it head on and make ourselves uncomfortable and listen, deeply listen and care, things won't change. But I do see that. I see people listening for the first time. I see people taking inventory of what they're doing. And again, it doesn't make someone a bad person, because sometimes people don't even understand what makes somebody else feel uncomfortable. But that's what I love about what they're doing in race car. I love what we're trying to do here, you know, as far as hiring practices, how we evaluate people. Because, again, people want to say, well, no, it's about – no. It has been unfair for umpteen years, and I've seen it. And so what's going on now, you know, having people taking inventory with the police policy, hiring practices, firing practices, qualifications, all those things, let's have a – because nobody's asking for anything, any handouts, nothing free. Everybody just asks for a level playing field, let's start at the zero at the goal line, not have someone start at the 10-yard line or 20-yard line just because of their skin color. And let's start at the same goal line and go. Because I do know my life, I can tell you every part of my life, I've started at the goal line, and my counterparts and everybody's counterpart, if you're African American, have started out whatever occupation it is at the 20, at the 25. You know, that's what these conversations about now. Let's start at the goal line together and have a 50-yard, 40-yard race. And let's let the best man or best woman win in that situation, no matter what skin color, as long as they're qualified.
Case, well said. You and I have had these discussions many times. I feel like a lot of people are now hearing the music, the stuff that we've been singing. But I will say this. We both have biracial kids. And, we talked to Wayne Embry. We've talked to Dominique Wilkins. And I'm going to throw you in that group as well as me, that I'm encouraged by the diversity of the people listening and protesting now and saying, hold on a minute, this has to stop. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it came to light with George Floyd, but it has been going on, as you said, for years. But I think for me, you know, it's like a game. You're selling hope now because the game looks like it could be different. There's greater diversity and inclusivity in the people asking for change.
No question, Jones. And until, and no disrespect to anybody else, but the white men of power, and people who don't have a heart, who don't want to see change, they're going to hear that as something terrible. But until people of power speak up, and I told my owner the same thing, until he speaks up, because when billionaires start speaking up, that is where the change comes. Because we said this the other day, myself, Doc, Nate, we can get up on a board and jump up and down. But until Pop speaks up, our owners speak up, Steve Kerr speaks up, and Quinn Snyder speaks up with passion, with this being their thrust, what they can do to change. Because like it or not, we have a platform that reach people that want to hear and want to listen with an open heart and a pure heart. But until, you know, and I saw when Larry spoke up, that's great. My owner is speaking up out front, putting his resources and his, you know, to change with the police policies here. You know, until they speak up and make it continuous, after the cameras go off, after all this is over, all the funerals are had, you know, that's when change is going to come. And that's what's so encouraging now, as we see so many people of power speaking up again and out against, you know, racial injustice, police. And not only that, banking policies. How do those loans, those small business loans, go out? You know, how do we miss here in the United States, and I'm sure in Canada, of loaning small African-American businesses money at the same level? All those things are now have to be at the forefront of change. And if not, we're going to be doing the same song and dance 10 years from now, 5 years from now. But I do see, like you, Jonesy, I'm very encouraged and positive and hopeful that, that those changes are coming. And the people that don't want to see them, those probably the same people that want to continue what happened, you know, to George Floyd and people that happened back in the 60s that I came through segregation, they want to see that. But progressive people, people with a pure heart, pure mind, they want to see change, and they're willing to listen to what's going on.
Dwayne, we could have had you on for the entire hour, but we're up against a break right now. We appreciate the time today, the insight. All the best to you and your family. Stay safe and healthy, and look forward to chatting with you soon.
Thank you so much, Ian. Take care, Jonesy, and you guys stay safe, and good luck to the Raptors down in Orlando.